Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors, and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
What's the 411? You're tuned in to 411 Teen. 411 Teen is a weekly program for teens, families, and other interested folks. 411 Teen provides a forum to examine and discuss various issues and events that confront, intersect, and sometimes interrupt our daily lives. I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield, and joining me here in the studio, I welcome a dynamic group. I'm always glad to have them, and I welcome Nicole Cordova. Nicole is a student at UCF. She's majoring in biomedical science. She likes to play music and party and advocate.
Hi, happy to be here.
Glad to have you. Anna Zhang. Anna is in the graduate program at FAMU in public administration. Her interests are advocacy, politics, creating balloon art for parties.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Katrina Oshant. She is a student at Dunbar High School in Fort Myers, Florida. She's in 12th grade. She likes helping people and basketball and advocacy.
Thank you for having me here.
Justice McGill. Justice is a student at Pasco Hernando State College, sophomore, into reading and hanging out with friends and family.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Glad to have you. Morgan Nicholas Faulkner Perry. He is a student at St. Petersburg College. He's majoring in business administration. He is a sophomore. Some of his interests include politics, advocating, music, and presidency.
Hello. It's great to be here.
Okay. And last but not least, we have the mentor, Jeff DiMario. Jeff hails from Palm Beach, and we welcome him.
Hey, thanks. It's great to be here.
Glad to have you. Florida Youth Shine, striving high for independence and empowerment, is a youth-run organization with representation from across the state. Membership is composed of teens and young adults between the ages of 13 and 24 who are current or former foster youth in the Florida child welfare system. Their mission as advocates is to empower, improve, educate, and support the growth of tomorrow's leaders through the combined knowledge and experience of today's youth and supporters. Their goal is to share their stories and experiences in order to improve the system of care for their brothers and sisters currently in care or those who have yet to enter care. So, Florida Youth Shine, I just welcome you. I always look forward to having you all and talking with you and just finding out what's happening in your world and where you're at. But first, let's introduce our listening audience to just what it's about, because I know a lot of people probably don't know what Florida Youth Shine is all about. So tell us about Florida Youth Shine. Who are you? What do you do? How did it evolve? You know, just give us a picture, paint a picture with words of what you're about. And whoever wants to go first can. But I'm looking at you. I guess you're in the hot seat. Do you want to go?
Sure.
Okay.
Hi. So Florida Youth Shine is a youth-led advocacy group. Our parent organization is actually the Florida Children's First.
Uh-huh.
And as you said, we have representation from all over the state. And we like to advocate on...
Well... On lots of things, I'm sure. You
yes,
know, things that affect you, things that affect foster care and individuals in foster care. You want to add to it?
Yeah, so we just strive to improve legislation and pass legislation about mm-hmm. foster care. We do meet quarterly, and in July, we always come together with children from different counties, and we really hone in on issues that children are having, and we vote on one issue. We ask ourselves, what is our priority? What is happening over and over mm-hmm. again that we want to change or influence? And that's how we come to our topic.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Sounds Any other comments?
Yeah, and since we are incorporating youth from all across the state in and out of the system, it helps make them feel like they have a voice and it helps them to feel empowered.
How long have you all been in existence?
Florida Youth Shine has been around since 2005.
That's very admirable. You all have been doing your thing, because I have interviewed you on a number of occasions, and I know you've had different. One was the normalcy. Mm-hmm. Well, I remember when you dealing with the normalcy, and that passed. You want to share with the listening audience just what normalcy means, what normalcy is all about. Because what I want to do, again, is I want the listening audience, those who are listening to us, to be able to walk away after they've heard this program and know what Florida Youth Shine is all about, and know what you all do, and what you are, what your goals are, and where you're going. So I know that normalcy was one of those issues that you advocated for, because I don't think people have a real feel for what it's like to be in foster care. I mean, you know, they just say foster care, but they have no idea what's going on. They have no idea of, you know, the hoops that you have to jump. So what I want them to do is to get a feel for, you know, what it's like and what it's been like. So that's why I'm asking y'all these kinds of things, okay? Yes, ma'am.
So normalcy is pretty much about making the foster care system more normal for the children in it, because prior to being in the foster care system, you're pretty much a normal kid. Why does entering care have to change that? You should always be treated like a normal kid. I remember from personal experience when I was in the foster care system, if I wanted to spend the night at my friend's house, I'd have to get them, like, their parents' background checked and everything. So I really didn't get to go stay over at anybody's house ever, and it really hurt my experience in the system.
Mm-hmm. And I know exactly what you mean. Thanks for sharing that, Justice, because I remember when I heard that the first time, and I was like, what? You have to go through all that just to be able to spend the night? If that's the case, you know, how do you have a normal adolescence? Everybody always wants to spend the night over their friend's house. And how many parents want to go through those changes? I mean, you know, to be real. So I think I appreciate you sharing that kind of thing. And I think another that I remember was the whole driver's license issue. Mm. Yeah, that mm-hmm. was a big issue. So anyone able to share that, talk about that?
Yes.
go right ahead,
Anna. Keys to Independence was Senate Bill 60, and it was really just an effort to make Keys to Independence a permanent pilot program for kids and youth. So it will make the foster parent less liable in a situation where kids are getting more driving hours and things involving insurance and things like that. And I think it's very important for kids to be able to gain that experience while they're in care. So when you do age out, you can get your license and your insurance is not going to be sky high because you have experience with driving.
Okay.
Yeah. Not only that, I mean, if you just think about all the things that driver's licenses are connected to, right? I mean, you can't get a bank account without a legitimate driver's license. You can't find a career-related or a job, for the most part, mm-hmm. or keep that job without a driver's license. It's really hard to get into the club without a driver. I'm just kidding on that last one. But more often than not, what we're seeing is that driver's license is the key to open up other doors like college and other career-related options for youth. And when they don't have that option because there's a foster parent too worried about liability, then it closes all those doors, and then youth have to do that when they're much, much older, mm-hmm. like in their 20s.
Well, and those are really valid points. And again, I think there are things that the typical Joe Blow doesn't even think of. I mean, you know, I didn't, when you brought it to my attention, then yeah, it may, but that's not something that you think of. So people are not aware of just what this means. And when you talk about you're advocating to empower students or folks in foster care, they have no idea of the kind, how limited your world is. And that's really what we're talking about. You know, I might as well turn it around. So all of you have either been in or currently in the foster care system, correct? Okay. That is correct. Yes. Now, who is currently in the system?
I'm currently in the system. I'm in EFC, which is Ascended Foster Care. Mm-hmm. I just got into it when I actually turned 18 on my 18th birthday. And I've actually had 56 placements throughout my regular foster care experience.
Wait a minute, Katrina. What did you say?
I had 56 foster placements.
Really?
Yes, ma'am.
Can you share with us how you, as much as you're comfortable, share with us how you got in the foster care system in the first place?
I got in the foster care system because when I was little, my family was neglected and we were abused. Mm-hmm. We were pretty much on our own, but pretty much at a young age. I had my six other siblings. We're all fighting for ourselves, and we're trying to live like together as a family with our mom not being there. And it was a really rough time because my brothers had enough of it. And I remember the whole situation when we actually, like had to tell the school, and the school didn't believe us. They called our mom, and our mom actually, like, pretty much hit us again. Well, hit me again, and I ended up with a black eye and a busted lip. And then the fact that happened, we went to school, and they finally believed us. It was hard to take that in because why did it have to be that way? Why did you have to, like, you didn't believe in the first time? Because mm-hmm. if a child comes up and says, I'm being abused, if it's not just one, it's five other people, then that should be enough validation for mm-hmm. you to actually understand the fact that something's going on. So the fact they went back to my mom showed that they didn't seem to care, and that's what hurt me a lot.
I'm sure. I'm sure. That I thank you for sharing that. Yeah, Jeff.
Yeah, maybe for the audience listening in, maybe Katrina can explain a little bit more about what extended foster care means. What does it extend to age-wise?
Foster care's EFC keeps going until 21. Mm-hmm. And you have the fact that you can be in a place where is approved placement. Like if you want to go to your aunt's house or your friend's house, they have to be approved through the system. And you're able to get, like, if you're going down a path, you can go get $200 of allowance or, you know, if you work, you can work in the system too. So I just feel like, you know, if you don't work, you have that chance to get $200 and be able to try to reach a goal if you need to, or if you work, you can actually work towards something bigger. So that's what I viewed it as.
Okay. Well, you all hold your thoughts for a minute, and I do appreciate you sharing that with the listening audience. You tuned in to 411 Teen. I have a dynamic group here, Youth Shine. We're going to take a break, but we'll get right back at you. If you're just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen. I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield, and joining me, I have members of Florida Youth Shine. Florida Youth Shine has 13 chapters across the state. Florida Youth Shine come to the Capitol to advocate for issues important to foster care youth. And again, I want you to know that 411 Teen applauds the efforts of Florida Youth Shine, their advocacy and their job, and it's a well done job, okay? So thank you, and we appreciate, you know, what you're doing. This hour, I'm talking with members of Florida Youth Shine. Let's see, Katrina had just shared with me, you know, what it was that got her into foster care. Would some of the rest of you feel free to share that? Because, again, people need to understand the dynamics and what goes on to in your home, in your world, that gets you into foster care in the first place. So whoever feels comfortable in doing that, okay?
So prior to being in the foster care system, I was raising my three younger brothers because my parents weren't around. My dad was in jail or prison most of the time, and my mom had a new boyfriend who was very abusive. Pretty much every day we'd see him beating on her and whatnot, and then they'd go off and do drugs somewhere and leave me with my brothers. I had an older sister, but she moved in with her dad because she did not like my mom's abusive boyfriend. So that's how bad it was. She made that decision at 8 or 9. The rest of us were stuck there because our dads were probably incarcerated or something. So I was stuck raising my three younger brothers because nobody was around to take care of us.
How old were you at this point?
I was probably 7 or 8, raising three kids. It was difficult, but I had to make ends meet, and sometimes we didn't have food or running water or anything. So it was definitely difficult, but we did sometimes have help from family members, but they didn't really know the extent of the problem. Mm-hmm. And the sad thing for me was I thought this was normal because I had never seen any other life aside from mine. So I was just living this. Now I know it was a terrible life, and I just thought it was normal. Like, every kid does this. Every kid doesn't have food to fill their stomach every night. They don't always have, like, a warm place to sleep or whatever.
Mm-hmm. That's normal, Justice. I appreciate you saying that, because if you haven't been exposed to anything else and that's all you know, it would seem like it'd be normal.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. How did you cope with that?
I'm not sure. My main reason for being the way I was is I had to be strong for my brothers. I had to make them know that, I don't know, I had to try to comfort them because I knew that they were distressed. Seeing our mom being beat on, I kind of figured that wasn't normal, but the rest of it I thought was normal. Mm-hmm. So every time they would argue and be screaming, I'd just take my brothers in my room, turn the TV up really loud, put on a movie, and try to get them to sleep. So that's kind of how I coped with it. I just put my brother's priorities in front of my own and just took care of them.
Anyone else want to share their story? Yes,
so
Morgan.
I went into foster care on a very unusual day. Basically, my step-grandfather picked me up from school. I think I was like 8 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was my sister was dropped off at the second house that they used for therapy and so on, counseling, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was dropped off of this facility. My grandfather, you know, said goodbye and so on and so forth. And I was, all of a sudden now I'm at a group home.
You weren't informed of any of this?
No. I was just dropped off at some facility, and then they took me to a group home. Or took me to placements, then I was put in the group home.
How old were you?
8 years old.
Wow.
I was originally, actually, from what I was informed, prior to this, from my guardian litem, if you will, she informed me that I was, when I was born, I was put into foster care, and then I was in relative care from there and adopted at 7 for 10 months and then put back in foster care and lived there until I was 18 years old and got out of foster care.
Well, this is a question to all of you. I'd like to hear you respond to it. When you think about your placements, you think about, you know, the hoops you've had to jump. What's been the most challenging for you, and how have you accomplished it? And whoever wants to go first, and I'm looking at you. You got the in the hot seat, so let's go.
I would say the most challenging thing for me when I went into foster care is trying to maintain my identity and then losing my identity and having to find who I was after aging out of foster care, because in foster care you are limited to what you can do and how much you can really explore who you are. Your contact with your family is limited. So really, because of all the things I was hindered from, I feel like when I aged out at 18, I had to start all over again. Who am I? What do I like to do? What are my interests and what path I want to take? So, and another.
Did you know anything about your family? Were you able to have contact with them, even if limited?
There were times where, no, I mean, I used to try to sneak and take the house phone, but my foster mom, like a house phone, you can tell when someone's in use of the line, so she would pick up the phone and disconnect me when I would try to talk to my family. And it's important to note that I was not removed from my family for any type of abuse. They were just incarcerated.
Mm-hmm.
And just the whole traumatic experience of being taken from a situation and put into another situation when foster care was supposed to make everything better, in a sense.
And it doesn't sound like it made anything better. It doesn't sound like you even had basic privileges to use the telephone.
Exactly. Okay.
Who wants to go next?
I'll go. So leadership actually is one of my greatest proponents that actually improved who I was individually. Not just from the foster parents, from the Albertans and the Gauchers, but the Junior Reserve Officer Training Corps at Braden River High School, a huge proponent in my leadership skills, and then also taking the time to look at like General Dunford, who's mm-hmm. the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, listen to his speeches and understand it starts to hone into who I am as an individual. You take the leadership of other individuals that have came before you, including General MacArthur or General General Patton, who was a huge proponent in World War II, and you start to look at who is around you, and then you mm-hmm. start to, again, identify who you are and start breaking down the barriers that people put in front of you, and you start moving forward.
How do we harness that? And that's fantastic. Yeah. That's mm-hmm. super.
Thank you.
That, I mean, and you just kind of came up. Nobody was advising you to do this. I mean, it was your way of coping, your way of handling.
Right.
Fantastic. Yes, ma'am. What about challenges as you think about them?
I think one of the challenges I experienced through foster care is actually trusting, because mm-hmm. when you come to the system, you don't really know who to trust or who mm-hmm. to confide in. And I think that's what one of the biggest things that I have had or have trouble with, because if I were to talk to somebody about how I felt and then I felt like, you know, I opened up to them and they took that information, I confided into them. Well, when they come back and they turn around on me and try to use it against me, I have that so many times happen to me. It kind of makes me, well, who should I trust? It makes me question myself, question if my time is even worthy, if my story is even worthy. It makes my voice feel like, you know, it's weak or something, because mm-hmm. I just didn't know who I could confide in. So when I actually tried to confide in somebody, it was hard to actually believe they actually believed in me, because I became more skeptical. I became like, I don't think this time's worth it or anything, and I just shut down, you know, completely. And I think that has been a very bad setback for me, because it, you know, some people that actually care for me, I've shut out because of the past experience that happened so many times and so many times and so many times.
But you seem to have great insight into it. I mean, you know what's going on, okay? And you know how you got there. That's a good point. So, yeah, you got to move forward, but at least you understand where this came from. Okay, why you have, you know, some reluctance to trust people. Makes a lot of sense. Yeah, did you want to add something, Jim?
Yeah, you know, it's really interesting listening to the young people speak, and I think it's just something that we as adults that work in the field or are associated through legislature or whatnot need to kind of understand. It's that I think what I see is that when young people are really young, they don't have all the words to explain their experiences, right? I mean, it makes sense. You just don't know all those big words. You don't know who General Patton is.
Right.
But then as you get older, what ends up happening is that you find those words. And so what I love about Florida's Children's First is that they give that voice to the kids.
Mm-hmm.
And they give it back to them in such a way that they could tell these stories and have meaning and improve systems that are broken so that foster care can rebuild what family should look like, what normalcy is, and create legislation that really just makes sense for young people.
Elaborate a little bit more on the relationship between Florida's Children First and Youth Shine. I mean, I know you said, I think you said it was the parent group, or can you elaborate a little bit more?
Florida Children's First is the parent organization of Florida Youth Shine, and they're a nonprofit, a private nonprofit. And it's important to note they don't run off of federal dollars. Everything is donated to them. And just the ad, Florida Youth Shine, has made a great difference in my life and afforded me so many opportunities, and I'm very grateful for both organizations.
And also, it's really important to note that they employ the use of volunteer mentors. And so that's my role is I don't work for Florida's Children's First. I'm an outsider to this process, just a volunteer to work with the young people. And one of the things I love is that the mother agency doesn't push the agenda of what they want. They explore with the youth what the agenda should be, and then they kind of hone that voice and the message to be something that's meaningful in the community. And it's really hard. I'll tell you, I work in the field of child welfare. It's really hard not to put your agenda in, to slide something in there because you might need more money or whatnot. And they don't do those things. And it's really it's admirable to watch that roll out. And you get to see all the changes. And just
Kurt
Ryan.
Yes, They've been on, it's been several years now, but he came on and talked about Florida.
That's right. There's some mentors that are legendary, if you will, in the circles of Florida. U-Shine Kirk Brown has definitely earned his stripes, mm-hmm. and hopefully one day I will be remembered that way, too.
Jeff is definitely remembered that way.
Yeah. Do it. Okay. Share with us, you know, what was the most challenging while you were in?
I think the biggest hurdle for me was definitely maintaining my ambition academically while living in a group home. Just to tell you a little bit about myself, okay. I started off when I first came to my group home at age 15, I was in remedial classes in school. I was placed in like the lowest level of math and reading. Turn around to my senior year of high school, I'm taking multiple AP classes. I'm in my honors band. I received the AP Scholars with Honors Award from this college board, which it was just very difficult to be able to maintain this workload and to be a part of the band program, which is where the Normalcy Act comes in. That is very mm-hmm. important, especially mm-hmm. in a group home setting.
To be have to stay after school, practices, maybe picked up later. Yes, well,
absolutely.
Sure.
Yeah, well, even one of the worst experiences I experienced while in my group home was I am in this honors band and I am trying to excel as much as I can and make something out of myself. But while I'm participating in band, we were a competitive band program. So we would go to different places throughout the state to compete in our marching band program. There was an instance for me where we came back at around 2 a.m., and my group home didn't pick me up. And at that time, I was very shy, and it was a new school. So for me, I walked home at that time.
Wow. Oh.
And keep in mind, I lived close to downtown in Orlando. So no girl at that age should be walking home.
No.
And I didn't have a cell phone. Again, I was very shy. I waited until everybody in the band program was gone. And
they left you there?
I took my pride in my hand and I walked home because I was too shy to ask any of my new classmates for a ride home.
Mm.
So well, that was a hurdle for me.
Yes. And you obviously overcame it. So that's fantastic. Anything else you want to share?
I think one of my biggest challenges while in the foster care system was dealing with the separation of my siblings. Mm. I know it's hard to keep four siblings together in one home because that's a lot to take on. But we were also promised visitation twice a week, or once every two weeks, that we actually didn't get. I went months without seeing my brother, so you can imagine how hard it was going from pretty much being their mother figure to not knowing where they were or what they were up to or just being able to see them.
How long have you all been in Florida Youth Shine? How long have you all participated and been involved?
I've been involved for about a year now.
Okay.
I started in 2014.
Okay, so, yeah. So you've been around.
Yes.
Okay. Yes, ma'am.
About 2 years.
How were you?
I've been involved since 2016, but this is the first year that I've really dug my nails into it.
Oh, okay.
And I've been involved for a little over a year.
How did you get involved in Florida Youth Shine? I mean, what was the appeal to even become involved? You know, I mean, I'm sure there are a lot of things that you're exposed to and they tell you. But why did you decide to go with it?
Well, for me, back in 2016, of course, they mentioned the advocacy group and everything. Mm-hmm. But I think that was the year that we went down to Miami for our quarterly meeting. So I thought, oh, it'd be really cool to stay in a hotel in Miami and then also get to, like, make foster care better for the kids that come before us. Mm-hmm. So. Trip to Miami was definitely a good nudge.
Well, as a little kid, I always knew that there was a spark in me that wanted to actually make a change because I know at a young age I wanted to have that voice and use my voice and actually help people to, you know, strive for something better and, you know, do good things because I know at a little age I was seeing there was problems with the system that I just kept telling my caseworker, I kept telling everybody above me, and I was like, listen, this is wrong, maybe we could change this, we could change that, mm-hmm. and actually I found something that actually I can use my voice, utilize it, and make a change, and I actually found FYS, and I said, okay, I'm going for it, mm-hmm. so that's what I did.
For
For me, my mentor, Alahita, approached me and she told me I should really join Florida Youth Shine. And me being an introvert, I was like, But after going to the meetings, I just found Florida Youth Shine really helping me, like, walk in my purpose. Like, this is my purpose, to advocate and make other people's lives better. And it has just molded me to be, like, such a phenomenal person. And like I said, I'm forever grateful. And that's how I got involved.
For me, it was, first of all, hearing about it and then going to, just like Anna said, going to the actual meetings. Mm-hmm. And then when I start meeting the people in Florida Youth Shine, you start to create a family, and then you want to keep going and going and going, and it becomes a part of your life.
Okay. Have you all found that the Florida child welfare system is how receptive have they been? I mean, because everybody, I'm sure, is not in Florida Youth Shine. Do they respond to you differently if they know you're in the program? I'm just wondering. Does that make sense?
It does. Let me just, for the mentor perspective, might spark some conversation here. Look, Chapter 39 of the statutes for child welfare is a boring read. You don't see it on the beach. You don't see it on a bestsellers list. It's not something people pick up and read. But when you see a face associated and a story associated with what's in statute, then it becomes a real thing. And I think a lot of these people, young people, can easily tell the story, whether they're from Youth Shine or not. But Youth Shine does a really good job kind of organizing thoughts and whatnot. So I don't know if Youth Shine is the key factor. It is a critical factor to kind of getting legislation across into people's minds. But it's also just good to interpret some of these boring statutes that are out there. Anybody else?
I'm just, you know, wondering how your interaction has been. And you can think about it, because we're going to take a break shortly. Since you have been in Youth Shine, have you found that your voice, people are more receptive to what you say? They're more open to listening. I'm going to ask you to hold your thoughts, because there's no need of me having you start. We're going to take a brief break, and then when we come back, you're tuned in to 411 TV.
Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors, and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
What's the 411? You tuned in to 411 Teen. I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield, and joining me, I welcome all folks who are from Florida Youth Shine. I welcome Nicole Cardova, Anna Zhang, Katrina O'Shant, Justice McGill, Morgan Nicholas Faulkner Perry, and Jeff DeMario, okay? We are talking about Florida Youth Shine. We've been painting pictures for people to hear and understand who you all are. And my question, I had a couple questions, but we'll start with this first one on board, was just, how do folks respond to you? Are they receptive? And I don't mean just the legislators. I know you're up here to do some advocacy, and we're going to talk about the advocacy that you're doing. But I'm just wondering, what kind of response do you get when you say, you know, well, I'm in foster care? Or is that something you don't even tell people? How do they respond? All the way across the board, whether it's friends, you know, those who are classmates, teachers, whomever, do you get a different, have you noticed that they respond any differently? Does that make sense? Okay. All right.
So, regards to response from people outside of Florida Youth Shine, it's really how we conduct ourselves individually.
Okay.
So, how we conduct ourselves is how people are going to respond universally. And when you talk to people about foster care, so far when I communicate people about foster care or Florida Youth Shine, people are receptive. People aren't judging me, at least I don't, you know, on the outside. And it's not, you know, to me, I never had a bad experience with communicating with people about foster care or anything about that in that nature.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes, ma'am.
When I share like social media posts about what I'm doing, I know I have some kids that are in foster care. They reach out to me and they ask me, you know, questions and how they can get involved and things like that. But what I'm getting from your question overall is, are we treated differently? Sometimes we are. Like, some people have stigmas about children in foster care. And, you know, I'm glad that I'm sitting here with this, like you said, dynamic group of people. So where we're proving all of those things wrong. We are worth it. We are smart. We're educated. And we're beautiful.
Yep. All those rolled up in one, you most certainly are. I wish we did. This is one time we do need to be on television.
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am, Katrina.
I feel like people that are outside of FIS view me as a very respectful person. They say that, I guess they say, not to like sound like I'm like trying to make myself look better or anything, but they say
real.
I'm very articulate with my words,
yeah.
And they feel like I can do something great with my voice, and that shows me that, well, if they see it, well, I should see it myself too. So, but another thing is that at my school particularly, people say like, oh, are you with your mom and dad? Then I have to go say, you know, you can't just be stuck and be like, well, I'm in foster care, and I just say that. But 9 out of 10 chances, most people say they think I'm with my mom, my dad, because I don't really, it's not that I'm trying to hide that I'm in foster care, is that some people just don't need to know, and that's why.
Yeah.
And so I put myself out there when I need to put myself out there. And sometimes I just keep tame myself, and I need to contain myself, because not everybody needs to know your business.
That's right. Sounds good. Yes, ma'am.
I think personally, when I was younger, I never disclosed that I was in foster care, or that was like a subject that I personally decided to just keep to myself. Now that I'm older and I'm part of Florida Youth Shine, I see the respect that Florida Youth Shine gets when we come to the Capitol, because we work so hard to prepare to come, to know how to speak to legislators, to get our point across. We're a powerhouse, honestly, and the way we're able to articulate ourselves and get these bills passed that change lives for thousands of kids throughout the state, I think that is the front that a lot of these legislators see, and Florida Youth Shine does get a lot of respect for that from what I've seen in our time in the Capitol.
Okay.
Justice. And I know from my personal experience, when I tell people that I am or was in foster care, they're usually like really interested, and I usually take that as a time to educate people, because when I say I'm in foster care, they look at me and they're like, oh, you're adopted? Like, they don't understand that. Now I'm adopted, so that's true. But so I educate them. I'm like, no, I don't live with my parents right now. I'm in a home that's taking care of me until either my parents can get me back, or they decide it's time, like, they terminate my parents' rights, and then I get adopted parents. So I'll tell people, and usually that really sparks an interest in them, and they want to know more. And I'm a very open person, and I really want people to be educated. I don't want them making assumptions about things, so I feel it's important to do that.
Well, I know you all are up here for advocacy. You know, you've been meeting with legislators. Share with us, though, how do you prepare for advocacy? What have been the steps in your preparation?
So one single step is to figure out what exactly we're going up to do.
Okay.
One thing is like preparing people how to speak, what they're going to speak on, and how to dress, as well as how we're going to execute everything. So a good plan violently executed right now is far better than the perfect plan executed next week, and that's by General Patton. So when you're preparing for each of these things, it's sort of like when we got in groups, we decided, okay, this is how we're going to say things, and this is how we're going to bring this to the legislators. So it goes down to the basics of trying to nitpick out what exactly our weaknesses are, so our strengths show.
So all of you met together before you came up here? I mean, how did that happen? Can you share that with? I mean, how did this evolve?
Yes, we have quarterly meetings, so throughout the year, and we always meet, and we teach each other. It's youth teaching youth skills about public speaking, strategic sharing, like how to share your story in an effective way, in the least words that you can, but still making an impact. Like Morgan said, we teach them professionalism, how to dress, and we give them time to process their stories. And before we go to the Capitol on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, over the weekend, we sit through those presentations in a big conference room, and we engage in a lot of educational activities that help prepare us for the Capitol.
Comments you want to add to preparation?
Do a lot of research to see what we're working with, and actually, so we just don't go in there without, you know, without any knowledge of what we're seeing or what the the statistics are. And if we go in there with our data, we look more like we know something instead of we not knowing anything. Yes, we got our stories, but we have something to back it up, too.
Mm-hmm. That's important. Yes, ma'am.
And another form of preparation that I think is one of the most important is emotional preparation. Some of the things you are sharing on are things that you still need to work through, so it could bring up some emotions. And I've seen some people get really emotional while they're sharing their story. So they need to prepare for, how can I do this and not get so upset? Or maybe I need to work through this and I'm not ready to share it this year, but maybe next year I can share this.
That's a good point. You must have been reading my mind, because I was anticipating, how do you feel when you're sharing this stuff? How are you able to jump that hoop? Yeah, go right ahead.
I know usually after Florida Youth Shine, I'm emotionally exhausted after we do the Children's Week, because you are sharing a lot of stuff. And even though I'm like, oh, I've dealt with that already, sometimes you actually haven't. You're still going through how to repair yourself or whatever from whatever trauma you went through. Mm-hmm. So even during it, some nights I just feel drained. And it's because draining. We are sharing a lot.
Uh-huh.
And yeah. It can be emotional.
Yes, ma'am.
With that even being said, you are drained with what you got going on too, and you're drained with other people what they got going on, because you feel their energy. You feel like, wow, they went through that too. You see who you can relate to and who went through something different, but you still have that empathy for them, that compassion, because you're just like, whoa, like they had a hard life too. I'm not the only one.
Mm-hmm.
And you stick together as a bond, like your brothers and sisters. So that's why I view it as.
Now, Nicole, this is the first time you have come.
Yes, here. This is my first time in the Capitol.
What's been your impression? How have you responded? What do you think of what you're doing?
Well, let me just start off by saying Tallahassee is beautiful. I love the buildings and the architecture, but the time that we spent in the Capitol building speaking to the legislators has been really inspiring and motivating, and has made me want to think about not only myself and what I can do to improve myself and therefore improve the world, but also the power that these youth have in sharing our stories, and how much I want to encourage other youth to also come and share their stories so that they can also make a difference.
It's fantastic. When you look back, and are there any benefits that you can identify from being in foster care?
I think becoming out stronger, like being independent. You go through a whole lot when you're younger. And you sort of get that expectation and vibe of independence. So when you go through a lot and as a young individual, you start to build your home. You start to build what exactly you're going to be a lot sooner.
Okay. So okay. Any other comments you want to add? Yes, ma'am.
Like I say, my favorite phrase about foster care is foster care is a blessing and a curse. Because I feel like it has benefits, like, you know, the free tuition exemption thing. And also it has, you know, the fact that you have EFC, so many services that you have through foster. And I feel like it's been beneficial to me because, one, I learned a lot through foster, lessons that I probably would not have learned just as, you know, any other kid. So, you know, I just feel like it taught me a lot of things that helped me become a stronger, resilient person that I am right now. So.
Okay. In these last minutes, we've just run over time. We need to talk about what you've been up here advocating for, okay? Share with us. What's on the table today?
A Florida Youth Shine Bill of Rights for the foster kids. So we have all of these rights in place now, but it's spread out through different, I think, other laws. Mm-hmm. So it's hard to find them. With the Bill of Rights, it puts them all in one place for foster kids to find easily. And if any of the rights are being violated, it gives them an ombudsman to call. So maybe you're not getting enough food in your foster home. You could always call. That is an issue in some foster homes still. You think, wow, you're moved from one situation where you're not getting food, put in another where you're still not getting food.
That's what I'm thinking.
So you can call somebody, and then they can have that investigated and hopefully fixed, or you'll be moved to a different placement, I believe. I'm not sure.
Personally, a major component of this bill for me is the fact that it allows for all foster youth to know their rights so that they can advocate for themselves. One of those including the tuition waiver that my friend Katrina here mentioned before. And for me, the tuition waiver completely changed my life. I am currently pre-med and my tuition waiver will cover me all the way through medical school. So coming from a kid that grew up in a group home to someone that could eventually be called Dr. Cordova, and having and knowing that I have all the support and knowing that my school could be paid for, even though I experienced this trauma and foster care in my youth, it feels like the golden ticket, honestly, to know that my education can be paid for.
Okay.
Just really quickly, I just want to start out that it's interesting how other groups have rights. You know, if you think about how senior living environments have rights.
That's right.
Nursing has rights, and they post those rights, and they put them everywhere, right? And so these groups have rights, yet when we try to establish rights for foster youth, all of a sudden it becomes something that needs to be part of legislation or not. So let me just volley this back to the group or even try to take over the show a little bit. But we learned recently that some of those rights are now at threat and being taken out of legislation. One side has determined that those rights shouldn't be in text listed out because they're in statute in other places. And so, I mean, I know that that hit hard home here at Florida U Shine. Like, we had them all in one place. They were listed neatly, and now they're not, right?
Yeah.
So do we want to go into that? Because I think there's some real emotions about that.
Right. Good. Anna?
So like Jeff was saying, there is a Senate bill and there's a House bill about a Bill of Rights, but the House did take the rights language out and they are now listed as goals. So this puts us in a predicament where it's like, okay, we don't want to give foster children rights. And my question is why? You know?
And the rights are the basic kinds of, I mean, I read all of them and they're basic, like right to medical, psychological, you know, treatment. Right to having food. I mean, a right to having clothing. I mean, these are basic kinds of things. So I'm very confused about it. So that's why I would love you to elaborate and educate me, because I don't understand what the problem is. You should have a right to health care.
Let me just add, these are also rights we already have. They are already in Florida statute. It is already Florida law.
Okay.
What we're trying to do is have them all in one specific place and have all foster youth know these rights so that they can advocate for themselves. And when they know that you don't have enough food in your group home, that you have someone to call, or you know about your tuition waiver, or you know so many other aspects of this bill that it's important for all youth to know.
Exactly. Other comments?
I think the question about why is a good one, and I think that's one that we're wrangling with as a group. And I think that's just part of the magic of Tallahassee. It's we write something good, everybody's shaking their head, but then somehow when session happens, it becomes, oh, we got to take this out. So, you know, I think there's some things on the table that U-Shine is having to dig into, like, does this lead to future lawsuits? I don't know what the concern on the other side is, but we're open to hearing those. We're opening to volley back our side of those, and I think you heard clearly today how important they are from the youth that are at the table.
Yeah.
Yeah, like Jeff said, maybe lawsuits is something that they're afraid of, but 26 other states have a foster care bill of rights, and we don't see like a whole bunch of lawsuits happening there. We just want there to be a bill of rights where people that work in child welfare have to follow these rights. I mean, it's common sense, you know. If you're working for children, why wouldn't you want the best for children? It's so hard to just say because it's common sense.
Go right ahead. Did you have something you want
to say? No, I mean, just right on. I mean, what can you say?
Amen,
right?
I guess my question is, what's the opposition?
I'm not sure, because these are actually already in place. I don't know if it's because they don't want us educated on what our rights are or what, but they are already in place and they should be followed to this day.
Sounds to me like they don't want to be held accountable.
Yeah.
Once children know their rights.
Yeah, that may be. I just don't understand, because they're all basic kinds of things. You know, dignity, liberty, pursuit of happiness, not to be placed in a home that has five or six other foster care students or clients in it. They're just so basic. You say, I'm kind of like at a loss for words. What's the issue, I guess? What's the deal? Why no?
It's really interesting, actually, because one of the rights in there is actually within sort of itself represents the U.S. Constitution. One of the Bill of Rights in the Constitution, which is freedom to go pursue your own religion. So what is the issue? Why are you so, you know?
Why is there a problem with that?
Exactly.
That's why I'm looking at you all like, what? Maybe I didn't read it right. Am I missing something? Because they all, when I read it, I thought, well, these are all, they're just regular things that everybody has.
Yeah.
Why is there a problem with that?
It's so simple, like a traffic light.
Mm-hmm.
It's the law to stop at a red light.
Right.
You go on green.
Right.
So, you know, you can relate it back to foster care. Like, hey, like, you're doing something wrong, so that needs to stop. Or, hey, we need you over here, so continue down that path, you know? I know one of those was, like, psychotropic medication and, you know, some people not having consent to put certain children on psychotropic medication. I had a really close friend who is passed now, and, you know, psychotropic medication is a big one.
Yeah.
And to know that there are kids that are just on medication without any type of signature or consent from anybody.
I got to have you all come back. I mean, this is disturbing. That's it. We are out of time. I know we just ran out of time, but I do want to extend to you a sincere appreciation for coming to my listening audience. Thank you for your time and your ear. Tune in next week, same time, same place, to get the 411 on 411 Tune. The 411 Team was produced by Dr. Liz Holyfield. Technical assistance was provided by Ken Smith. If you would like to participate in 411 Team or have suggestions for discussion topics, call 850-645-7200. 411 Team archives are available as streaming audio and as downloads from WFSU.org. Check us out on Facebook.